Hello, and welcome to our program, Business News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Vanessa, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the business section of the San Antonio Express News here on OWL Radio. Our first article is titled, Foray into Vegas, Not the First for Chain, by Madison Isler. Whataburger plans to open a restaurant on the Las Vegas Strip this fall, but it will not be the fast-growing chain's first-ever site in that city. San Antonio-based Whataburger said its first large-scale franchisee, Western World Foods of Houston, expanded the chain to markets that included Las Vegas in the 1960s and 70s. Western World Foods was Whataburger's largest licensee in 1977, with more than 64 restaurants in several states and gross annual sales of more than $15 million, according to reporting at the time by the Houston Post. Western World also opened Whataburger locations in California, Arizona, Colorado, and Utah. Ultimately, the franchisee decided to transition their focus and sold the Nevada restaurants in the 1980s, a Whataburger spokesperson said. The chain now has no stores in California, a dozen in Arizona, five in Colorado, and none in Utah. In its new Vegas push, Whataburger is partnering with franchisee Panda Restaurant Group, which owns Panda Express and other chains. The store will be co-located with Perry's Pizzeria and Tap House in a two-story structure next to the luxury Waldorf Astoria Hotel. It is expected to be finished this fall. As the city that never sleeps and a brand that is open 24/7, it only made sense to bring a Whataburger to the Strip, President and CEO Ed Nelson said in a statement. Harmon Dobson and Paul Burton founded Whataburger in 1950 in Corpus Christi, and it has since expanded from a single burger stand to a thriving chain with a loyal following. Its growth has rapidly accelerated since 2019, when the Dobson family sold its majority stake in the company to Chicago investment firm BDT Capital Partners. Whataburger had more than 820 locations in 10 states at that time. The company started franchising again after a 20-year pause, and today it has more than 960 locations. The Las Vegas restaurant and others planned in North Carolina and South Carolina will give it a presence in 17 states. The bulk of its footprint, 725 locations, are in Texas. Our next article is titled From Flooding to Sweltering, by Jamie Lozano Carver. May brought an unusual sight to the arid high plains, rain and lots of it. Parched lands that previously begged for water welcomed the downpour. Farmers still recovering from the drought-ridden season a year ago could finally sigh in relief. Then came the cruel irony. The rain did not stop for weeks. The same water people prayed for all year was flooding farmers out of their fields and stopping them from planting their crops on time. Now, as the entire state sees blazing temperatures, farmers are questioning if the whiplash-inducing weather will lead to another busted year. We were better than we were last year because of the rainfall, said Calvin Trossel, an agronomist with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension in Lubbock. The question now is, what will our rainfall look like the rest of the year? That could make or break a lot of crops. The heat has been unrelenting across the state. Last month, there were an unusually high number of days when temperatures topped 100 degrees. This month, El Paso has set 7 daily heat records and is on pace for its warmest month ever on record, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Through Tuesday, afternoon temperatures in San Antonio have topped 100 degrees for 18 days so far this month. What is going on in the high plains is just as strange. The astounding amount of rain, 200% of the usual rainfall in the Panhandle and 130% in the Lubbock area, helped keep the region slightly cooler than the rest of the state at the start of the summer. The current U.S. drought monitor shows most of the region is clear from drought, but sweltering heat waves are sapping the moisture from the ground. Unless some rainfall appears soon, these high temperature anomalies will increase through the end of July, said Victor Murphy, Climate Service Program Manager with the National Weather Service. That would be devastating for the High Plains. The region's economy took a big hit last year when the drought caused billions of dollars in losses, which has pushed farmers to lobby for additional disaster assistance in the 2023 Farm Bill. With Farm Bill discussions underway, Senator John Cornyn visited Lubbock to talk about the high-stakes legislation that pays for crop insurance as well as the USDA's rural development programs and the nation's food subsidy program known as SNAP. The massive legislation is projected to reach $1 trillion. Garrett Kautz with the Lubbock Chamber of Commerce emphasized how important agriculture is to the region that sits right below the Texas Panhandle. In Lubbock County, there are more than 1,000 farms and 530,000 acres of farmland that people depend on. Everybody in every single industry on the South Plains, even if it isn't directly involved in agriculture, is most certainly impacted by it, said Kautz, the Agriculture Committee Chair for the Chamber who has worked on a farm bill before. Cotton is the backbone of agriculture in the High Plains region and supplies 30% of the nation's cotton, but it has not been spared from the unhinged Texas weather. After the pressure of the insurance deadline forced many cotton producers to plant late, the crop is now dependent on the rain from a month ago to bloom in the peak of the summer. All the fields behind me are yet to bloom, and once we go into that, your water use increases dramatically, said Mark Brown, Director of Field Services for Plains Cotton Growers. Cotton can sit there and hang on until the rainfall, but if it waits too long, then the potential of the crop is limited. There are also concerns about how crops and livestock are not getting relief from the heat at night. According to Murphy with the Weather Service, the average low nighttime temperature for Lubbock this month has been 71.2 degrees Fahrenheit, about 2.4 degrees warmer than normal, making it the ninth warmest period on record. This is a warming trend seen nationwide. In the last 30 days, there have been more than 2,800 times a city or town's coolest nighttime temperature was hotter than previous records. During the same time, NOAA found about 683 times when the hottest nighttime temperature was cooler. Murphy said this ratio has been consistent over two decades. One of the prevailing wisdoms with climate change is that the biggest impact, at least initially, will be felt in warmer nighttime temperatures, Murphy said. It is especially difficult on cattle and livestock. They have a difficult time cooling off at night. Our next article is SLB Wins Suit Focused on Women in Oil Field by Amanda Drain. An eight-person jury delivered its verdict Wednesday in a sexual harassment lawsuit brought by a former SLB employee, finding that Jessica Cheatham failed to prove the oilfield service company allowed the hostile behavior on its rigs and retaliated against her for complaining. The Houston-based company, formerly known as Schlumberger, said it was pleased with the verdict. While no industry is immune to these issues, the company said in a statement, "We will continue to improve and strengthen our processes, and we wholeheartedly support and stand behind anyone who has been the victim of sexual harassment." The multi-million dollar federal harassment suit heard over 8 days in U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas in Houston put a rare spotlight on women working in the oil field. Cheatham claimed her experiences at SLB were representative of systemic sexual harassment and assault that women endure while working for the company on oil rigs. Her attorney, Michael Palmer of Sanford Heisler Sharp, said he was disappointed with the verdict. "We continue to believe that Ms. Cheatham experienced gender discrimination, harassment, and retaliation during her time at Schlumberger, and that the company should have been held responsible for its failure to properly investigate and prevent these harms," he said in a statement. "But we are grateful that after years of litigation, Ms. Cheatham had the opportunity to tell her story. Women have been underrepresented and struggling to advance while working for oil and gas companies, according to a 2019 study by consulting firm McKinsey & Company, which ranked the industry last in female participation among 18 of its peers. Katie Minert, CEO of Houston-based workforce culture consultancy Ally Energy, said times are changing as employers reckon with the Me Too movement and a growing need to attract and retain employees willing to work in the field. SLB said attracting a diverse pool of workers is crucial to its success. The future of the energy industry and our own commitment to driving innovation are completely dependent on our ability to attract and retain the most diverse, inclusive, and talented workforce, it said. That is why the core of our culture is centered on maintaining and supporting a harassment and discrimination-free environment where everyone feels safe to grow, learn, and contribute. Our next article is titled Heat Protection Steps Issued by Sarah DeNatal. Texas workers will get new protections from the state's blistering heat, including access to drinking water under steps announced Thursday by President Joe Biden. Mayor Ron Nuremberg and Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego joined the president as he announced actions the White House is taking to try to protect workers and communities baking under prolonged stretches of record high temperatures. The safety of outdoor workers has been an increasing focus in San Antonio and across Texas because of a new state law that limits local governments' abilities to enact their own rules, including those requiring water breaks for construction and other outdoor workers. "What are we doing here? Where they refuse to protect these workers in this awful heat," Biden said, adding that he will start calling out states where workers do not even have the right to take a water break. Via teleconference, Nuremberg told the president that Texas cities are in a battle with the GoPled state government for local control. "But we were going to do everything possible to protect our most vulnerable workers, especially those outdoor workers, for basic things like being able to access water breaks," he said. According to surveys by the Workers Defense Project, nearly 40% of construction laborers say they are not given regular breaks on job sites, even in the heat of summer. Under extreme heat, such as South Texas and increasing swaths of the nation are facing, Biden said that is not acceptable. To address the issue, Biden has asked the Department of Labor to issue the first ever hazard alert for heat, which the White House said will help ensure employees are aware of their workplace rights, including protections against retaliation and ways to stay safe amid the heat. The president has also called on the department to ramp up its number of workplace inspections to enforce safety violations in at-risk industries like construction and agriculture. Other measures announced Thursday would improve weather forecasts from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association and make drinking water more accessible in three western states. The actions were announced as nearly 40% of the U.S. population is facing heat advisories, according to the National Weather Service. Even in San Antonio, 2023 has been unusually hot. So far this summer, San Antonio has had 28 days with high temperatures topping 100 degrees and is on track for one of its hottest seasons on record. Already, the state's power grid has set at least 5 unofficial records for electricity demand, as Texans rely more on air conditioning amid the heat. Even those places that are used to extreme heat have never seen it as hot as it is now for as long as it's been, Biden said. Even those who deny that we are in the midst of a climate crisis cannot deny the impact extreme heat is having on Americans. In Bexar County, the number of heat-related illnesses reported this June jumped from 206 from 119 the same month a year ago, according to data from the city's Metropolitan Health District. So far this summer, at least 13 people in Texas have died because of the heat. Nuremberg told Biden that the city has moved to end the use of coal and is launching its first advanced rapid transit line, which will feature low or zero emission vehicles. The city is also developing more solar power and other renewable energy, he said. I am confident that the state best known for oil and gas production can help lead the way to a greener tomorrow, he said. Biden agreed and commended San Antonio and Texas for their growing use of solar and wind power. Our next article is titled Officers Charged in Killing Aced Their Reviews by Emily Eaton. The three San Antonio police officers charged with murder in the shooting of Melissa Perez were consistently rated as meeting or even exceeding expectations during their annual performance reviews, even though two of them were disciplined repeatedly for violating department policies. The performance evaluations assess officers' knowledge of local, state, and federal laws and San Antonio Police Department policies, among other subjects. Records reviewed by the Express News give no indication that any of the three officers ever received unsatisfactory review below expectations. Sergeant Alfred Flores and officers Eleazar Alejandro and Nathaniel Villalobos are accused of shooting into Perez's Southwest Side apartment June 23rd after she allegedly threw a glass candlestick at an officer and later in the evening rushed toward police with a hammer from behind a locked glass door. Perez, who is 46, suffered from schizophrenia and was in the midst of a mental health crisis, her family said. McManus has sharply criticized the officer's actions as reckless, particularly those of Flores, who was the first supervisor on the scene. McManus has said three should have requested assistance from the department's mental health unit or simply backed off and returned at a later time. It was a failure of officers on the scene to follow routine training and protocol and practices when it comes to dealing with calls involving folks who are in mental crisis, which this turned out to be, McManus said shortly after the shooting. In an affidavit supporting the officer's arrest, an SAPD homicide detective said the officer should be charged with murder because the hammer in Perez's hand did not pose an immediate threat, given that there was a locked glass door between her and the officers. Attorneys representing the officers have said their clients committed no crimes. They have accused the department of arresting them in haste and without serious investigation. All three have been suspended without pay and are free as they await trial. SAPD performance evaluations judge officers on 10 standards and supervisors on an additional 7. The Express News obtained evaluations for Flores, Alejandro, and Villalobos through the Texas Public of Information Act. The records date back to 2011 for Flores, who joined the force in 2008, and to 2021 for Alejandro, who became an SAPD officer in 2018. The records on Villalobos go back to 2022, the year after he joined the department. They show that the officers consistently were rated as meets expectations and occasionally as exceeds expectations. Twice, Flores was praised in his evaluations for his performance as a supervisor in South Patrol. During a critical incident, Sergeant Flores supervised the service area while all other supervisors were tied up with the incident, his supervisor, Lieutenant William Grona, wrote in January. He handled the section with no issues, performing well by himself. Grona said Flores, who was promoted to sergeant in May 2021, continued to grow as a frontline supervisor. He encouraged Flores to pursue additional training to bolster his confidence level. His confidence in his decision-making is not always on display, and as his knowledge base grows, his self-image will most likely follow, Grona wrote. He should communicate his ideas with his fellow sergeants so he can assert a more resolute image when addressing his subordinates. Before the Perez shooting, Flores had been suspended 5 times in the past 5 years for a total of 44 days, according to disciplinary records. At one point, McManus considered suspending Flores indefinitely, which is tantamount to a firing, but ultimately decided on a milder punishment. Most recently, in August 2021, Flores was suspended for 10 days after he allegedly left evidence, a laptop bag with $1,852, inside his patrol vehicle instead of placing it in the police department's property room with other evidence he had confiscated during an arrest, including a large quantity of marijuana. He left the bag in the patrol vehicle for 30 days before another officer discovered it. That same day, disciplinary records say Flores muted his body-worn camera for an hour and 21 minutes without documenting the reason. Officers are allowed to mute their body cams. Under certain circumstances, they must document the reason. Less than 5 months later, Flores received good marks during his annual performance evaluation. In two areas, initiative, cooperation and responsiveness, and appearance and demeanor, Flores exceeded expectations. Earlier this year, he received a rating of exceeds expectations in those two categories. Sergeant Flores always presents a professional appearance, Grona wrote. His demeanor when talking to the public is a calm and professional demeanor. Alejandro had been suspended 4 times in 4 years for a total of 43 days, disciplinary records show. Recently, in August 2020, Alejandro received a 25-day suspension for not immediately arresting a woman who was suspected of shoplifting at a Walmart store, even though he had probable cause, according to the documents. Alejandro made the arrest only after the woman refused to sign a document warning her against criminal trespass. "It's time to go," Alejandro told the woman, disciplinary records show. "I'm being real nice about it and I can be an expletive, but I want to be real nice today." 5 months later, in January 2021, Alejandro met expectations in all 10 categories during his annual performance evaluation. He did the same in 2022. Earlier this year, he met expectations in 9 categories and exceeded expectations for initiative, cooperation, and responsiveness. "Officer is fantastic team player and is always willing to assist other officers," wrote his supervisor, Sergeant Gary Mutchell. Villalobos had never formally been disciplined before the Perez shooting, records show. In his 2022 performance evaluation, Villalobos met expectations in all 10 areas. Earlier this year, he met expectations in 9 areas and exceeded expectations in written skills. "Officer Villalobos has excellent written skills and conveys information professionally and concisely on his reports," Mucho wrote in February. Police were sent to Perez's apartment complex on June 23rd after she was seen cutting the wires to the fire alarm system serving the complex. She said the FBI was using it to eavesdrop on her. The 3 officers shot Perez dead at 2:02 a.m. A judge signed a warrant for the officer's arrest at 6:28 p.m. the same day, 16 hours later. It is exceedingly rare for police officers to be charged with murder in connection with line-of-duty shootings. San Antonio police officers have been charged with murder or manslaughter a handful of times over the last 4 decades for off-duty killings. But until the Perez case, no officer had been charged with murder for an on-duty shooting, according to news archives and SAPD officials. "We acted swiftly, but we did not act hastily, if I can draw that distinction," McManus said in an interview with the Express News editorial board last week. He said he, his top commanders, and homicide detectives did a lot of research in the law, a lot of discussion with the DA's office. McManus added, "This was probably one of the first times there was 100% concurrence among homicide folks, my staff, that this was the proper course we should take, so we took it." Our next article is titled "Canyon Lake Man Gets Life in Prison for 2022 Kidnapping" by Liz Tates. A Canyon Lake man was sentenced to life in prison after a Comal County jury found him guilty of aggravated kidnapping. Prosecutors said Zachary Alexander Woods, 29, held a 19-year-old woman captive and brutally abused her for a week in March 2022. He was convicted last week after a four-day trial in Comal County. Woods met the woman in December 2021, the Comal County Sheriff's Office said. During a week in late March, Woods held her captive in his home. During that time, he abused her in numerous ways, including hitting her with a bat and belt, stabbing her, stomping her, and waterboarding her. She suffered a spleen laceration, a broken hand, nose, and tailbone, and fractures to her back and ribs, the district attorney's office said. The woman's name was not released. On March 29th, she escaped to a neighbor's house while Woods was sleeping, she testified. The neighbor called 911, and officers who arrived were taken aback by the extent of her injuries, according to officials. Investigators recovered audio recordings from Woods' phone made while beating the woman over several days and played some of them for the jury during the trial, the district attorney's office said. Woods has an extensive criminal record. He was charged with aggravated kidnapping a decade ago, according to Comal County court records. He also was charged with four counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony in 2012 and 2013. In 2014, he pleaded guilty to those assaults and the kidnapping charges were dismissed, court records show. He was sentenced to 8 years in state prison. Our next article is titled, Will New Buc-ee's Store Drive More Development in Burnie? By Ricardo Delgado. Towering over I-10 a few miles south of downtown Burnie, a billboard reminds everyone driving past that one of Texas's best-known businesses is coming. TikTok, the billboard reads, referring to the impending arrival of a Buc-ee's Travel Center in the Hill Country City. Work on the $38 million project, planned for a roughly 35-acre site at I-10 and US 87, could start as early as October and take about a year to complete, according to documents filed with the state. The new Buc-ee's is expected to draw thousands of visitors each day, and it could be a catalyst for more development nearby. It's not yet clear, though, how Burnie city leaders will be able to guide that development and address concerns from the residents, some of whom are worried about increased traffic, environmental impacts, and potentially reducing their property values. Rapid population growth and increased commercial development have been points of contention in recent years in Burnie, which has seen its population roughly double to about 20,000 in the past decade. City officials are aware of the challenges of balancing that growth with trying to maintain Burnie's small town character, said City Council member Joseph Macaluso, whose district includes the Buc-ee's site. My whole vision and goal is about doing what's good for Burnie within the context of what we are allowed to do under state law, Macaluso said. Some of the concern is over what kind of additional development could be built near the new Buc-ee's site. A Buc-ee's store opened in New Braunfels in 2012, and a significant amount of retail and commercial projects have sprung up nearby. New Braunfels is not an apples-to-apples comparison with Burnie, Macaluso said. New Braunfels is much larger with about 100,000 residents, and it's on I-35 between San Antonio and Austin, two of the nation's fastest growing metro areas. And even before Buc-ee's opened in New Braunfels, city officials were looking to spur growth in the area, approving a tax increment reinvestment zone to encourage investment. While Burnie approved tax breaks for Buc-ee's, the city's officials have not taken similar steps to attract other projects. In Burnie, the growth has been slower, but it is coming, Macaluso said. My view is just trying to support the growth in a smart way. We are not anti-development at all. It's just that we have to do it the way the community feels it should be done. You have been listening to Business News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thanks for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Vanessa saying goodbye from Owl Radio.